Welcome to IntelliCast, powered by Skip.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Not sure where you're joining us from, but I'd like to welcome you to today's program, Better Competitive Intel: How to Segment Data to Anticipate Competitor Activity and Generate Nuanced Insights About Your Market. My name is Michelle Winter. I'm the Director of Education Programming here at Skip, for those of you that don't know me. And we are so excited because we have the Global Head of Media Intelligence from NetBase Quid, Harvey Rignola, here with us today to share some really, really cool stuff. So I'm actually going to not take any more time and turn this over to Skip's Executive Director, Cam Mackey, and he's going to take you along for the rest of the ride. Enjoy the program.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. Folks, welcome. As Michelle mentioned, I'm Cam Mackey with Skip. Thanks for joining us today. So the name of the game today is segmentation. It's, one size fits all, doesn't work for clothes, and it really doesn't work for competitive intelligence. And so we're going to talk for the next 45 minutes or so with Harvey Rignola from NetBase Quid. As Michelle mentioned, Harvey, welcome. Thanks for joining us again today.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here. I love this format, by the way. So I do applaud you guys for running with this. And yeah, I'm just excited to be able to share and discuss some of our own findings with you guys. And obviously, since this is a discussion, I would love to also just, hear more about what you guys are seeing out in the field as well.
Fantastic. Well, that's good. Yeah. Let's definitely keep it informal and not death by PowerPoint. So Harvey, maybe, before we jump into the segmentation issue and competitor analysis, for those folks on who don't know about NetBase Quid and what you do, maybe a little bit of a background on the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So NetBase Quid is actually the result of two companies merging together earlier last year. So we've been one company for a little bit more than a year now. But when you look at the company's histories combined, we have a total of close to 30 years in terms of development of our product, as well as just refining it and just ensuring that it provides folks with a platform that really enables them to sift through mountains of data and to minimize the amount of busy work, if you want to call it that, in terms of your research to actually get to the fun stuff, which is the analysis and deriving insights from them. So at the core of our company is the AI in helping you to be able to identify what some of these trends, these emerging themes may be, so that your job is much easier in terms of pulling useful and relevant information for larger strategies. And really for people like me who have a research background, I used to be a journalist. So at one point in life, I used to be a reporter. Prior to that, I was actually a legal assistant / paralegal. So research is in my blood, maybe not necessarily market research at the time, but over the last couple of years as a marketer as well, being in the space where it's really important to understand just how consumers are discussing and talking about whatever market it was that, I was supporting at the time, being able to leverage a platform like this is a dream for me. And I say that not as a commercial about the company, but more so about myself and tapping into something that I find interest in. So whatever it is that I'm interested in, we may talk about cars today. We may talk about guitars.
Nice.
These are good things that I pop into NetBase Quid and see what people are actually talking about with regard to any of these things that I'm interested in. So it makes it that much more exciting and fun to be able to, to hop on a webinars like this with you guys, or regardless of who it is that we're joining and presenting on. I get to share my own interests, not just from the perspective of things that I find as hobbies, but also in the research aspect of it and being able to pull these insights really quickly, because I don't have to rely on a research team conducting primary research and waiting for them to compile that information and clean it up. And then finally getting and going, all right, now I could actually start the fun stuff. We could do all that stuff in an hour and a half or less, depending on the scope of the project. So that in a nutshell is NetBase Quid and why I'm excited to be able to share, some of the insights with you guys.
Love it. Yeah, and I love what you said about kind of that spirit of curiosity, right? And it's man, what a time to be a market and competitive intelligence professional. You know, the at least CI has been around, give or take, 35 years in one version or another. And you know, market intelligence, you could probably argue since the dawn of marketing. But I mean, holy moly, in the last decade or so, just given the amazing advances in technology, you know, what we can do as a profession is transforming. So maybe, you know, let's get some of your thoughts, Harvey, on what's the state of market and competitive intelligence today? You know, where is it and where do you see it going in the near term?
Yeah. Well, just like you said, Cam, the last couple of years have been amazing just in terms of new developments in technology and really just enabling folks to be able to do their jobs better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in one of the studies that you all published with Crayon, I believe it was in 2020, mm-hmm. there were a number of survey respondents, you know, a large majority of them who talked about how competitive their space has become year over year. I'm trying to just pull a couple of numbers off the top
like
of my head.
Like it was 90% here, but, say it's, right, you know, right, more competitive than ever before. Yeah. So right. Pretty much everyone. Yeah. Scary
yeah,
stat.
Yeah, exactly. and so, you know, as a result, there's both new challenges as well as opportunity, right? And even though the space, the discipline has been around for a long time, more and more you're seeing companies allocate more of their resources towards it and recognizing how important these functions are within companies, because there's so much more that we're able to do now as a result of new tools that are available to us. And so we're not as limited by time, by money, by human resources to be able to accomplish these things. People, resource, I'm trying to think of the right term there that's politically correct, but sure. we, you know, we're not limited by finite resources now, right? You know, we don't have to worry about people getting tired in analyzing survey data. Right. And so we've been able to overcome a lot of these limitations. Obviously, surveys are still a critical part of any sort of research that you're doing, right? But the analysis portion of it, or you know, getting that ready to analyze, is something that you could rely on technology for these days, which is not something that you could say, you know, 15 years ago. So, you know, it's funny because I was actually just coming off a conversation with a couple of other folks at a different organization about how things have changed. And this is, I guess, more along your wheelhouse as well, knowing that you're a musician. We were talking about how much has changed in terms of recording equipment and what you're able to do now versus, you know, 15 years, even 10 years ago, right? And I had a story about how I had a couple of friends when I was living down in Southern California who were coming down from around San Francisco, from around the Bay Area, and they thought it'd be fun to write and record a song in the 6 hours that it took for them to drive down to where I lived.
Love it.
They were able to do that with their iPhone. I mean, you know, if you told someone 15 years ago, hey, I'm going to go and record and compose a song and have it all, you know, mixed and recorded on my phone, mm-hmm. they would look at you like a crazy person. You know, you'd be the crazy person in 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, right. That's a good reference. Yeah.
So it's the same way with the technology that we have available today, right? It's changed and for the better in leaps and bounds. And at the same time, the recognition of this particular discipline has also followed suit, right? There are people who are getting larger budgets. The teams are getting bigger. The salaries are getting bigger. And so, you know, there's more and more validation that this particular function is incredibly important to the lifeblood of a company.
Yeah, no, and I love that. And, you know, one thing, it's, you know, we have some purists in our membership and beyond who say, you know, with great credibility that market intelligence, competitive intelligence, and, you know, 20 other kinds are radically different and need to, you know, be completely separate. And we have others who kind of say it's all more or less the same thing. You know, just given, you know, some of the really powerful tools at NetBase Quid, what are your thoughts on the role of the customer or consumer in intelligence?
I think it's interesting that you say that, you know, there are members who are split between looking at these different functions as separate from each other, because it's not just my opinion, but you know, in seeing the way that the these particular disciplines and the way that companies have been looking at data, not just in silos, but in aggregate and looking at them together to be able to see the big picture, I'm more in the same opinion as the folks you mentioned in the latter, who believe that all these are so closely related to each other that you can't look at them separately. So whether you're trying to better understand consumer data, whether you're trying to understand what the news narrative is around your space, if you're trying to identify any emerging trends with regard to new technologies that are being developed or different companies that are focusing on potential unmet needs in your market that are gaining traction in terms of investment and picking up in terms of revenue, these are things that you should include as part of any analysis that you have when you're trying to better understand your market. Because from there, how that trickles down into all of the other types of analysis, it gives you that larger context to where you're not limited in your view of where you're able to derive your insights from, right? This is where you're able to uncover new potential threats within your space. So we ran this analysis fairly recently of the car rental space, okay, where one of the surprising aspects of it was that U-Haul was part of this analysis. Now, if you're going into this kind of research, if you're at an agency that's supporting one of these car rental companies, mm-hmm, and you're limiting yourself just to the traditional competitors, this may not be something that you see. And right, and part of the reason for U-Haul emerging as part of those conversations was because of the shortage of inventory with traditional companies. And so people were turning to U-Haul, renting out trucks and driving around Hawaii because they couldn't drive off in their Miata from Enterprise.
Because it's like $900 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
The price shot up as well. The other thing too was we were finding that, you know, as part of that larger analysis and seeing what were some of the emerging trends around there, mm-hmm, was that Turo was one of those other companies that they're relatively new, but at the same time, they're at the top of that leaderboard when you're taking a look at the competitors that were in the space or the companies that were being mentioned, right, with regard to rental cars. And when we dove into those conversations, we saw that people were talking about driving exotic cars or things like the DeLorean being available to rent on Turo, which is amazing.
That's cool.
Because I would want to do that.
Yeah, just don't go over 88 miles an hour, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, I don't want to accidentally go into the future and then back into the past and then ruin the timeline, right?
Exactly.
But the key finding there, not only in identifying Turo as a competitor, as well as U-Haul being, you know, a brand that isn't traditionally associated with renting a car, right, as part of that analysis, but also in drilling down into exactly why Turo was popular, it wasn't the utilitarian aspect of renting a car, right? It's not about getting from point A to point B when people are renting from Turo. It's about the experience. And, you know, it's interesting that people are gravitating towards Turo to be able to rent out exotic cars when Enterprise and Hertz, they had that tier, yeah, with their products. Right. And people aren't talking about them that way, right? People are talking about them with regard to the economy cars that are available to them that you could pick up at the airport, right? And so this presents an opportunity for them, if they choose to look at it that way, that people want experience to include what they're driving around, right? So if they're going on vacation, it's not just about getting from point A to point B, it's also being able to do that while having fun in your car. Yeah. Places like Hawaii, it may not be fast cars because some of you may know their speed limit over there is 55, and I was an idiot and I rented a Dodge Challenger the last time I went.
That's a lot of car, that's a lot of car. Yeah, they're gonna nail you for that.
Yeah, so I was able to drive far up north in Oahu to where the speed limit was 60, and I was like, yeah, now I'm opening up the throttle. But so, you know, that could be one of the nuances there as well, right? It could be fun, sporty cars, but not the ones that are overpowered, right? That you'd want to rent out for specific reasons. So like getting back to the title actually of this particular webinar, Fireside Chat, where it's understanding not just not just who the competitors are, not just what some of these key themes are that are emerging when you're analyzing the space, but also knowing what some of the local nuances may be. So when you're looking at demographic and geographic data, thinking about these things, having them in consideration as well, is something that you have to keep in mind when you're running this kind of analysis. And you know, I can get into a rabbit hole and talk to you for hours about the kinds of analysis that we're doing where we're uncovering these kinds of interesting insights. But you know, that's just an example of how quickly you can get to that information leveraging tools like NetBase Quid. And you know, sorry for the commercial, but that's literally how we came up with that.
Yeah. Well, no, it's such a good point. I mean, it's kind of a nice parallel because, you know, we started talking about some of the awesome things that technology is making happen in the practice of intelligence, right? Which is super exciting. But then, and then you did a great job transitioning to talking about how that's actually disrupting, disrupting industries. So like, you know, the example of, hey, let's, you know, take 6 hours in the car, use our iPhones or whatever device and, you know, write us and record a song. And so, you know, I think the, you know, maybe where let's take this next is, I mean, that is a huge implication on the whole sense of competition and also how you do intelligence, right? Because right. For, you know, for companies that are still saying we have a very fixed, static, competitive group, we're only going to track, this you know, small or large group of companies, doesn't matter. It's hugely risky. And so maybe if we could talk a little bit about like, you know, you've mentioned a little bit about segments and trends. Now, what are some ways that folks who are dyed in the wool, looking at my competitors, how can you kind of step beyond that? And as you say, like, what are some of the segments that you want to look at? You know, like, do you start to look at topical trends? You know, what are some steps you can take to think beyond just that tried and true top 10 competitor list for intelligence purposes?
Yeah. I think this is going to sound really, hopefully not condescending, but I feel like with a lot of folks out there, when they're mm-hmm. beginning their research and, you know, going into it, keeping in mind what the list of competitors are, mm-hmm. they're not thinking about things that are unrelated to their industry that could potentially impact it, right? So the keeping an eye on what's happening in the news and on social channels in general, I think is a great way to be able to identify what the next thing could be that you may need to address, whether it's a potential crisis or an unmet need. So definitely taking a step back and, you know, looking at the forest from the trees, right? Seeing what may be coming down the pike. And I have a really extreme example here and not necessarily around a competitive intelligence context, but more around how a much larger conversation could potentially impact your brand. Mm-hmm. We were doing this analysis of, you know, kind of after it happened, looking at Corona beer and prior to the coronavirus mm-hmm. and seeing that right around the time that they were getting ready to launch this new seltzer, there was a lot of conversation about people associating the coronavirus with Corona beer. Yeah, right. And as silly as it sounds, it was happening. There was a significant volume, not just in social channels, right? But because of the fact there's so much volume happening on social channels, there's so many discussions happening, the news picked up on it as well. And so that further amplified all these conversations about it, right? And so if they're simply looking just at their brand, they'd be able to see this great. But if they took a step back and just looked at current events, you took a look at what's happening on social channels, what people are talking about, they'd be able to pick up on that well before, you know, things hit critical mass and the news actually picked up on it, and to be able to intervene and to be able to take steps towards ensuring that it didn't blow up the way that it did. Instead, what they ended up doing was launching a campaign about their seltzers hitting your shores today at roughly the same time that the coronavirus was beginning to spread internationally.
What do you do?
They got like a double dose of bad press and poor, negative sentiment on social channels, right? So it's some of it's common sense. It seems like it's common sense, but, you know, as we can see in the real world, there are companies and brands who have demonstrated that it's not common sense. And I think part of that too is because if we're thinking about things in a traditional context in terms of really just keeping an eye or, you know, your ears to the ground and really understanding what is moving the needle in terms of conversations that are happening within the news cycle and how that's filtering down into social and vice versa, it was much more challenging to do that in the past, right?
Right.
But there's no excuse these days to not do that. There's no excuse these days to not have recurring analyses to have a better understanding of what's happening now that you could potentially take advantage of, you know, to find opportunities in, right? And in doing so, uncovering things that may be unmet needs of your potential customers that your competitors haven't addressed yet, right? So you never know what could be completely unrelated to you today that ends up, you know, veering into your lane into the, you know, at some point in the future because of different types of development. So there's no excuse at this point to not know what's coming. I mean, we literally had another webinar where I talked about crises are only for the unprepared.
Ha.
And I stand by that statement because there's no excuse to not be prepared. If you know what's going on in the world around you, you know what could potentially impact you. And from there, you could start narrowing down, you know, your analysis, whether it's at an industry level. And then if you want to slice that up by region or by demographic, whoever it is that you want to slice it up, or by interest even, which is incredibly important when you're layering that onto demographic and geographic information, you know, that should be your starting point on most occasions. Obviously, you can't, if you're relying on primary research to do that, then yes, I understand that's challenging to do, but that's not an excuse these days. If you want to get a quick snapshot of sentiment towards any given area, just take a look at conversations that are happening on social channels, mm-hmm. right? There's unsolicited feedback there. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to sift through, but then you have things like NetBase Quid to help you sift through that stuff. And from there, you're able to extract what you need for the larger strategy that you're trying to employ. So, you know, you know, going back to what I said, I didn't want to sound condescending there, but I do feel like it's so easy to do these days. Why not do it, right?
Right.
And it's not as expensive as it used to be. So,
So I mean, it's a great point. I mean, and I think, yeah, I don't think it's condescending. You hold us to a high standard, which we appreciate. So what we don't want to do, obviously, is, you know, hey, I got three competitors. I'm going to track them and nothing else. So fully bought in with you there, Harvey. So there's middle ground between that and tracking everything, you know, between, you know, different trending, you know, topics, between, you know, products, product categories, geographies, you know, different personas or, you know, demographic segments. There are a lot of angles to go. Yeah. Understanding that every company is different. Do you have a couple kind of go-to, here are some types of tiering or segments that you can often, topics, for example, that you can often find some good stuff in?
Yeah.
Or at least how do you have that conversation with management to figure out where to fish?
I think the middle ground is not just casting a wide net where you're looking at everything, obviously, but at the very least, I think the baseline should be researching your industry. So using neutral terms as much as possible, if it's in your surveys and also within your queries, if you're using a tool like NetBase Quid, right? Just as much as possible, keeping it as neutral as possible and also accounting for geographical differences, right? So one of the examples that I remember using for one of these other webinars that we've done was around the differences in how McDonald's is referred to depending on the country that you're in. So I can't remember what some of the specifics are, but you know, some countries call it Maccas. There are my mom's from the Philippines. In the Philippines, they refer to McDonald's as McDo's. And so if you're trying to understand, let's say, the fast food space, and let's say you want to layer on some of your competitors in there, McDonald's is one of your competitors. These are things that you want to account for as well. But you know, just taking a step back there, I think the baseline should be looking at your industry in a general sense, and then identifying what some of the larger themes are there, while also looking at any sort of temporal trends. So you want to be able to ensure that you're looking at things that are actually relevant today, as opposed to something that was relevant 3 or 4 months ago, because knowing how quick the news cycle is these days and the amount of information that's being pumped into news outlets and the amount of information that's being created on social channels, I think there's something like, I want to say 300,000 new news articles that are being posted on a daily basis. And
that's crazy.
Almost infinite social media posts on a daily basis, right? And by the way, I think the context of this was in English. So when you think about,
wow,
you know, internationally, yeah, there's so much out there, depending on the size of your brand, right? And I think that this is also, it makes this particular approach relevant to those who may be emerging players in a space, right? People may not be talking about your brand. You could be at a smaller company that is trying to break into something larger. This is one way for you to be able to identify areas of opportunity for you, because as you're seeing some of these trends emerge, this is something that you could eventually latch onto. So going back to that example that we're talking about with Turo being the brand that's being mentioned the most on social channels with regard to car rental services, as part of that analysis, one of the things that we identified when people were talking about renting cars in a general sense, so, you know, just going back to the idea of at the very least looking at your industry, is that over the last couple of quarters, as we started to see the light at the end of the tunnel with COVID-19 and more news about the restrictions being much less stringent, we saw a lot more conversations of people talking about international travel. And so if you're a car rental service that had an international presence, this is something that you'd want to be able to take advantage of, right, before your competitors do, and seeing that emerging trend. And, you know, another example of this as well is we're doing an analysis of mobile devices and operating systems. And one of the trends that we saw over the last 4 years was that every single year, the percentage of conversations about security and privacy continued to eat up a larger chunk of the news coverage and social conversations about mobile devices, to the point where in 2021, I want to say roughly 60 to 65% of what's being discussed with regard to mobile devices is about security or privacy. And Apple, recognizing this, they made this announcement in 2020 at their Worldwide Developers Conference that they're going to be making changes, right, to some of the privacy options on iOS 14. And then a year later, I don't know why it took them this long, Google and with their Android operating system decided to make a similar announcement about some of the changes to their hardware in terms of limiting how devices are going to be tracked and how that's available to advertisers, right? But they're able to identify that within the mobile device arena and people discussing mobile devices, that this was an emerging trend that needed to be addressed, and they subsequently did so. So, you know, in terms of being able to use that information to predict what's going to be coming next, I think that that's a great way to be able to do it. But the first thing you need to do is to identify what those themes are within the industry, and then tracking them, right? If you're not tracking them, if you're not religious about it, if you're not brushing your teeth every day, your teeth are going to get rotten. If you're not looking at this data on a regular basis, then your brand could get rotten and you could get left behind by someone else who is keeping an eye on these different trends and actually taking advantage of it and operationalizing it within their business.
Good. And so I like the tooth analogy. That's a good one. I mean, it's like you say, if you're doing primary research for this stuff, holy moly. Yeah. This, it would be like a once in a year project, right? Maybe, but you're right. Being with, you know, tools like NetBase Quid, you can just kind of do it continuously. So yeah, picking the themes is one key area. You know, you've talked a little bit about, you know, geographic segmentation. How about like demographics? Because I mean, that I gotta believe you can find out some pretty cool insights there. You know, whether it's, you know, gender or any number of other things.
Yeah.
What role do you know should we have, you know, intelligence folks think demographics can play in intelligence, you know?
I think what's important to keep in mind with demographics is not to limit yourself to physical attributes.
Okay.
And also think about their intent and their interests, right? Mm-hmm. So this is something that could be difficult just in terms of, you know, how you're wording your surveys. Okay. Or the way that you're analyzing your social data, right? It may not all be there. And depending on the social channel that you're looking at, some of this information may not even be available, right? So the reason that I mention this is because, you know, let's say, Cam, you and I, if we were of the same ethnicity, the same age, we're in the same location, and we have the same income, we could still have very different interests from each other, right? Sure. Coincidentally, we both have an interest in music, but yep. That's not always going to be the case, right?
Exactly.
My neighbor, who I think, as a result of them being in proximity to me, we're quite similar in terms of our profiles. Mm-hmm. But he likes gardening and I hate gardening. Right. So, regardless of how similar someone may look on paper, if you're not structuring your questions to be able to understand what some of their interests may be before you get into the meat of what you want to ask them, then you're losing out on some of that nuance, right? Someone who may be, you know, let's take this example of we're running this analysis of the announcement of the Ford F-150 Lightning, mm-hmm. and comparing it to conversations about the Tesla Cybertruck. And, you know, what we're seeing about that is the folks who were in similar age groups, they're gravitating towards different things depending on their interests. There are folks who were very environmentally conscious, right, loved the Tesla brand and posted about it frequently, were in Tesla forums. They obviously saw the Cybertruck in a much more positive light, whereas there are folks who just wanted a pickup truck who were of the same age, of the same gender, roughly the same region, who hated the Cybertruck because they couldn't care less about being environmentally friendly. They just wanted to be able to lug their stuff from one place to the next and to not do it in something that looked like a metal cheese wedge. And so these are the people who spoke positively.
I never thought about that until you mentioned it. That's a good, okay. There's something to it.
But, you know, it's understanding that, right? If we didn't know what these people were interested in, if we didn't know the types of things that they're posting about, if we didn't know about where they're communicating with others and interacting with each other about their interests, and all we had to go off of was their location, their gender, their age, and any other thing that you could identify on paper, then we would have a very convoluted and confusing data set, and we wouldn't know what to make of it, right? So really, I feel like that's the additional layer that we need to keep in mind, right? Like I said, in surveys, ensuring that at least the first couple of questions are addressing some of these things, yep, to have a better context about their responses, right? If you're seeing that there's someone who loves Tesla, loves being eco-friendly, composts and separates their garbage into the correct bins, and yet still loves the Ford F-150 Lightning, that might be a person that you want to talk to, right? So it's also being able to identify some of these outliers in the data to better understand why they're different from the rest, why they are over-indexed towards being interested in one thing when their interests may say something else. I mean, I feel like that's sort of the next step in that kind of analysis, right? You're able to validate things and then at the same time uncover why there may be outliers and see those as an opportunity to either refine your messaging or to be able to address that. Because for every survey respondent out there, for every person who's posting about it on social media, there could be thousands more out there that you don't know about, right? I mean, that's part of the danger in just relying on one data set over the other. You're introducing into it bias that they are much more likely to either talk to you or to respond to this survey, or that they're willing to post about their interests, right? So there are a lot of unknowns out there. Obviously, the data that we have available to us, we leverage them as much as we possibly can. But it's also important to keep in mind that there's still always going to be limitations in that. and to be considerate of potential outliers that could actually represent a larger part of the folks that you're trying to market your product to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point too. I mean, not to get too far in the weeds there, but I mean, you know, survey data, it could be great, but oftentimes what people say and what they do are different, and that's neither good nor bad. But yeah, it's good. But if you based all your business decisions on one survey, that is that, you know, you're going to get in trouble.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because the first thing that I thought of was MySpace surveys. And how more often than not, what I remembered seeing out of friends who were sharing the results, it was in line with essentially what they wanted to project themselves to be, right? And so it's similar in that sense, and exactly what you're talking about. What they say may not exactly correspond to what they do or how they actually feel. It may be what they want to project, which is not a bad thing, right? But it's important to understand the limitations in different data sets. And that, I think, further exemplifies why it's so important to look at multiple data sets together and not limit yourself to one.
Yeah. So thinking now in terms of, you know, we've talked about the transformation of the profession a little bit. You know, I think, you know, you've really done a great job, Harvey, sharing about world's super complicated. You know, there are things that you don't think affect you or your customers, but you really do. So you need to, you know, be thoughtful, but still cast a wide net. Now, maybe let's kind of close here talking about, you know, outputs. So, you know, what kind of reports, you know, what kind of analyses can we do? And then maybe a little bit the outcome. So there's all this data out there, you know, what types of business decisions, whether it's strategy, innovation, customer service, you know, et cetera, pricing, you know, so kind of, you know, take us home to what we actually do with this. So maybe, you know, first talk a little bit about some of the, you know, how do you present this data in a meaningful way so that I can actually drive a decision without just having, you know, eye charts?
Right. Well, it really depends on the stakeholders and who you're presenting this data to, right? If you're going to be presenting your findings to executives, you probably don't want to rely on a network map that's color-coded based on different themes and where proximity from, you know, one cluster to the next is important, and what that actually means and how you interpret that, right? We had this really great presentation from, I believe it was Brunswick Group, and it was during one of our events, NetBase Quid Live 2020, and I believe it was our North America event. And I think that some of those are still available on demand, but they talked about how they were able to take some of their data that they were using through NetBase Quid, and prior to presenting them to the clients that they were working with, who were not technical people, they put them into graphical representations that were much more straightforward. So simple bar charts or even scatter plots, you know, those are pretty easy for people to digest. On the other hand, if you're working with folks who are much more technical and who are a lot more inclined to be able to interpret data and to understand exactly your approach, and, you know, perhaps even, you know, other members of your team who may be, you know, focusing on something on a different area, but, you know, are able to get into these same tools and to be able to leverage them the same way that you can, you know, you would be able to present raw data to them and say, look, these are my findings. This is how I came to these conclusions. And you could probably replicate these yourself. So, you know, a lot of it's really, it's contextual. And I know for many of us, it is going to be presented to folks who are not technically inclined, who aren't always in the weeds. And there's always going to be ways to be able to represent this data in a way that's easy to digest for them. So the key takeaway here is knowing your audience, right? It's just like the way that comedians approach their tours when they're going from one city to the next. They know it's going to resonate with a particular audience in Austin that's probably not going to work in San Francisco, right? In the same way that you should be thinking of this when you are putting together your presentations, either for your own internal team or for an executive team, right? Something that's going to resonate with your internal folks who are in the weeds every day may not resonate. I mean, it may just completely fly over their heads and go, hey, what are you talking about? All I'm seeing is a spaghetti chart and I have no idea how to interpret this thing.
Right.
But you know, these are the kinds of conversations that, you know, we've heard of happening. And part of the reason why we see in some of these presentations, representations of our data that don't necessarily reflect the way that they come out of the box. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just understanding who your audience actually is and making sure it's both palatable and something they could actually interpret in a way that doesn't require them to jump through mental hurdles.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's just as we're talking about knowing the audience from the consumer customer perspective, you got to know your audience internally, or else, you know, you'll give. I mean, you've shared before some of those beautiful, you know, multicolored, you know, heat map charts. And it's one of those things where you got to take a few minutes to really kind of absorb it. And once you do, it conveys an enormous amount of information and value. But yeah, man, I've worked for some really impatient, you know, CMOs who will just say, stop it. I need two bullet points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What does this mean? Yeah, exactly. Right. Give me two bullets.
So, you know, kind of the last thing I want to, you know, drill down on with you is, you know, in CI, we have this, you know, what are the facts, the what, you know, what's the so what, and the now what. So, you know, let's maybe kind of hit on the now what. So the, you know, what are some of the business decisions that this can impact, and maybe an example or two of using, you know, data analyses, like we've talked about, you know, how do they actually help businesses grow or, you know, serve their customers better?
Yeah. I think there are two things that I want to touch on. So the first is, and I don't know whether or not I talked about this earlier on, but this idea that I believe Gartner coined about continuous intelligence and about not treating each of these research projects as a one-off, right? Just looking at them. I talked about brushing your teeth, right? And have something you have to do on a regular basis. You know, in a similar sense, being able to replicate and repeat these things. And obviously you have much more tools available to you now to be able to do this easily, is one important component to that. I think the next, just in terms of different examples that leverage a lot of the things that we talked about during this fireside chat in terms of essentially casting a wide net, narrowing things down, and then identifying any emerging trends that you may need to latch onto. Yep. I may have talked about this in a previous discussion with you, but you know, when we're looking at streaming services and how that evolved from vending machines, right? And people being, oh, yeah, actually, even if you go before that,
Redbox or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Redbox, they're still around, surprisingly.
They're still around. Yeah. They're still around, man. Yep. Good for them.
I saw a Redbox recently at the local grocery store, and they had this. It looked so sad. I'm so sorry if anyone on Redbox is watching this, but it said something like "new movies now available again."
Oh, okay. But to your point though, I mean, like, you know, what's a marketer's job? You know, the marketer's job is to profitably serve a segment, and right. You know, Redbox, you know, I don't know how big their segment is, whatever, I won't guess, but if they can do that, you know, bless their hearts.
Yeah. But so, getting into something that's less depressing is thinking about Redbox. You know, with the emergence of broadband and the availability of it, you know, as more and more households were able to gain access to broadband, then it became much more viable for streaming services to be able to launch, and for, you know, not just them, but also for websites to be able to serve up rich media. And, you know, one of the first brands to be able to identify that as an opportunity was Netflix, right? And Netflix got the head start on that. Then roughly a year later, Hulu ended up launching. And that wouldn't have happened without understanding that the market was ripe for the taking, that there was this opportunity for you to be able to serve up your movies, which traditionally only came in these physical packages and DVDs, and to be able to do so on the internet, because people are able to do that now. So I think that it's one of the oldest examples that I refer to. It was one of the first analyses that that I did when I joined NetBase Quid. Sure. But I think it speaks to this idea of having your ear to the ground, knowing exactly, you know, what developments in potentially related markets or industries could potentially intersect with yours at some point in the future, and then taking action before your competitors can, because you know this information, that and that it's allowing you to be much more predictive in the way that you're analyzing your data, as opposed to looking at what the status quo is and settling on that and not necessarily branching out to have a greater understanding of whatever it is that you're researching. So, I think it's fun to be able to uncover aha moments like that. That's not always going to be the case for folks. You could just be validating a lot of the same information that you're seeing on a regular basis, but the moment that you see an outlier in your data, you know, that's your signal to act and to do something about it. And you're not going to be able to uncover those things if you're not looking at your data on a regular basis.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think it's a great, you know, place to end. I think we're at time here because, you know, so much of, I think for me, the real takeaway in what you've shared, Harvey, is that the lines between customer, competitor, and, you know, I'd throw in there suppliers and, you know, kind of everyone in the, you know, value chain. Love that word. But it's they're blurrier. You know, Skip has some research coming out in a couple months, and we asked CI professionals basically what's keeping you up at night 3 years from now. 93% said that they think their biggest competitive threat is not today thought of as a competitor. So someone like, you know, so anyway, so I think that really just underscores what you're talking about here. It's that you need to be strategic in what you track, how you track it, you know, how you, you know, filter that information back to your organization and how you make decisions, because otherwise you're not going to spot the risks of disruption or the potential opportunities of disruption. And without some kind of tool to do it, you know, man, there are not enough hours in the day, right, to kind of comb through all that data. So yeah. Harvey, thank you. Any kind of, you know, wrap up thoughts you want to share with the audience?
No, I think, you know, the main thing that I want to be able to emphasize is, you know, just have fun doing this work. It's regardless of whether or not it aligns with your personal interest, there may be a nugget or two of information out there that you know, that draws your attention, that actually ends up being important to whatever your broader strategy actually is. And so, you know, for the folks out there who are in the weeds all the time, you know, staying curious is incredibly important. Yeah. And you never know, you may pick up a new interest as a result of some of the things that you're researching. So stay curious, continue exploring, and just have fun doing it.
Love it. Harvey Reynolds with NetBase Quid. Thanks so much, Harvey. Appreciate you joining us. And we'll make this recording available very soon. Take care, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks, everyone.